Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the We're Having a Good Time podcast. My name's Dusty Slay. I'm your host. I'm doing a podcast here at 8:40 in the night. Very excited to be here. Big week. Just got done reading some Nateland comments, people speculating about where I'm at, what I'm up to, and if I'm still sick. But you know what? I feel great. I feel like I recorded that podcast on Tuesday. By Thursday, I was tip-top, and I was off on the weekend. I went to York, Pennsylvania, and Tysons, Virginia. And by the time I was there, I was tip-top. So I'm back, baby. No lozenge, no coughing, no sore throat. Sinuses are clear. I mean, I'm back better than ever, right? So I wasn't sick. I had a trip. Oh, by the way, well, I'll get into more of where I've been in a minute. This weekend, I'm going to be in Wausau, Wisconsin on Friday. This is probably going to come out on Friday because I'm recording it on a Wednesday night. I got a little behind due to some travel that I had. So this is coming out on a Wednesday night. So it's probably not going to come out till Friday. So tonight, Friday, I'm in Wausau, Wisconsin. And then on Saturday, I'm in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So that's going to be exciting. Got some cool stuff coming up next week, too. Very exciting. So check out those shows. I think that's the end of November for me. I don't think I have more shows after that. That may be the end of November anyway. No, I guess it ends with the week after Thanksgiving, but I'll be off. And then after that, I'm doing some shows in Cancun. And then I got a show December 12th in Dubuque, Iowa. I got a zany show on December 16th. Then I'm going to be in Pocola, Oklahoma. And that's going to round out the year. December's pretty light. I'm going to be doing a decent amount of travel, but as far as shows go, pretty light. I got a couple of casinos, a Cancun trip. It's going to be pretty light. But I'm pumped. So, yeah, this weekend I went to York, Pennsylvania. I'd never been there. I had to fly into Harrisburg, which I have been to. There used to be a comedy zone there. There may still be. It was actually a really great comedy zone, but a really bad hotel. The comedy zone was attached to the hotel, and that hotel was really awful. I remember one time I was there. They had a door, you know, that went on the inside, and then a door that you could go out the other way, and it would take it to the courtyard in the middle. And I was inside my hotel room, and my main door I went in, and then I locked the latch. I pulled that little metal latch over, and then I went out the courtyard door. And when I went out the courtyard door, the door closed, and my key wouldn't access it. So I went to the front door, and they were confused. They were like, we didn't even realize those doors worked. So they didn't have a key for it. And then they were like, well, we can let you back into the main door, I think. Or maybe I had already tried it and realized I locked myself out because the metal latch had locked. And I think they had to basically break in. I don't remember what happened exactly, but yeah, it was a real mess. The hotel was a bit of a mess. They kind of renovated it, but it's like they almost renovated it and then just didn't put a lot of furniture inside. The first time I did that Harrisburg, Pennsylvania one, I did it with Chris Killian. And he wanted to leave. We did shows on Friday and Saturday. And he wanted to leave on Saturday and drive home. He hated the hotel that much. I was fine. But he hated it. I didn't care for it, but he really hated it. Another time, I don't know why I'm talking about Harrisburg, but another time, that's where I opened for this lady. Older lady, played guitar. Very nice lady. This really doesn't have anything to do with her other than, you know, I used to feature a lot at the Comedy Zones. I featured a lot, and I got paired up. Now, Chris took me on the road, me and him, Chris Killian, me and him went together. But when I wasn't working with Chris Killian, I was always just paired up with somebody random. Some I liked, some I didn't. But for the most part, I remember watching them and thinking, well, why am I not headlining? I would crush these shows. And then I would go, well, why am I not headlining? The people that I'm opening for, they're not a draw. They're not bringing people to the club. And so I would reach out to the Comedy Zone about headlining. They would always act like I wasn't ready. I am doing some Comedy Zone gigs, so I'm not, you know, I'm not trashing them, but I am talking about this time in my life. And so I just remember always watching the headliner being like, this is who's headlining and you won't let me headline. And I didn't want to take over the Comedy Zones. But I was like, man, it'd be nice to make a little more money because the feature pay is not good. And so when you're working with a booking agency where the headliners are not better than you, not saying all of them, some of them were, but for the most part, I'm like, the headliners are not better than me. I'm not saying I'm better than them, but they're not better than me. And they're also not a draw. Why can't I get bumped up to headline? But I didn't. And I never did really until I got an agent with the Comedy Zone. Now, another, agency I was working with, the Funny Business Agency, they moved me up. Like I did, you know, basically 6 months to a year of featuring with them. And then they moved me up to headline. So I was headlining and I always felt like those two agencies were kind of on par. I think it was, you know, I don't know, maybe an oversight of the, you know, agency. Or one time I got offered a gig. The Comedy Zone offered me a gig. I probably talked about this gig before, but I was, it was for like a beer company. I forget what beer company it was, but whatever the parent company of Red's Apple Ale was going to be doing a big, banquet a conference center where they had a gigantic conference room and they had all of their beer brands in there represented. And Red's Apple Ale was doing a little comedy thing. They were leaning into comedy, so they wanted to hire a comedian. And the pay was okay, but at the time, it was phenomenal. What I was making on a regular basis, that pay was phenomenal. And I was like, oh yeah, I want to get in on this. And so the, you know, one of the guys at the Comedy Zone said, you know, I'll book you here and then you can feature at the club over the weekend. And I thought it really sounded great. And a guy I was working with at the time who was kind of giving me advice on stuff, he said to me, he goes, I wouldn't take the gig. He goes, I know the money sounds good. And, but he's like, you know, I think it's going to be a bad gig. It's going to be a bad setup for you. And then you're going to look bad and it's going to reflect bad for the Comedy Zones. They're going to see it and see how you did. And they're going to go, oh, well, he can't, you know, he can't do the kind of gigs that we want. He's like, you're really set up to fail here. And so then I talked to a guy over at the Comedy Zone and he goes, no, no, no. He goes, I know what kind of gig it is. He goes, don't worry about it. It's not going to be a big deal. He goes, you just do it, take the money, and then I'll have you feature at the club. So I did it. And it was horrendous. It was a really terrible gig. I mean, they had the whole conference room. I mean, these conference centers are gigantic. These are some of the biggest rooms I've ever been in. And they have booths of all kinds. It's like a county fair, but just beer companies owned by the parent company of Red's Apple Ale. And next to me is like a DJ booth. And on the other side is a dunking booth. So people are literally throwing balls and hitting a target and knocking a guy into a thing of water. And on the other side is a DJ. And then I'm there And the gig is there's two girls in front of me at a bar, and they're bartending Red's Apple Ale. And then I'm behind them on a stage that's the bottom of the stage is probably 4 foot high. It's a really high stage, maybe even 5 feet. And it's a very small platform. And I'm up there with a wireless mic, and they want me to do 3 30-minute sets of comedy. And they wanted it to be completely different sets of comedy. So I'm just standing up on a stage behind two girls bartending while people are coming up and getting Red's Apple Ale. There is no captive audience whatsoever. People can barely hear me. I try doing a few jokes, and then I just kind of start riffing with people, doing a little crowd work with the people walking by. One lady came, and she was standing at the booth, and she goes, "What are you doing up there?" You know, and I go, "I'm singing." It's like people had no idea what was going on. And I don't think I did a bad job. But I wonder if it didn't get reported back to Comedy Zone that I didn't do a good job. And so I don't know. I've also seen reports. There's one club, I won't say what it is. It's not a Comedy Zone, but it's a different chain that I also worked for. And they would always give reports each week. And I got someone to, they got access to some of those reports, and they sent me a few of mine. And it was the weekend that I would work, and I would remember the comics that I was working with. So it'd be like headliner, feature, opener, and I was always the feature on these. And I saw the reports. And I don't remember everybody I've ever worked with in great detail, but I got a pretty good memory. And if you pull up a weekend and go, "Do you remember working this club with this guy and this guy?" Chances are I got a pretty good memory of it. And I was seeing the reports, and I saw the numbers I got versus the other people's numbers. And I'm like, who's doing this report? Who saw this show that night and gave me that number and gave them that? I'm not saying I got bad numbers, but they weren't great numbers. And I remember the show. And listen, I'm not delusional about my shows in either way. I never do a show and think it was worse than it was. I don't beat myself up and go, "Oh, that was a terrible show." But I definitely don't leave a show that went bad going, "That was pretty good." I'm not delusional in that way. I think I could use a little more delusion on one way, but it's like, so I feel like that's probably what was happening here. I probably was getting reports. And again, I'm not saying I crushed every show, but I'm saying the people that I was working with were not so much better than me that I couldn't be considered for headlining. And this happened a lot. This happens to people all the time, even now. I mean, I'm in a great place. I'm very blessed. But I'm saying the come up in comedy can be really hard, where you're like, I'm doing everything I can do, and yet I'm not getting the traction that I'd like. So all that to say, wow, what a tangent. I was working this Harrisburg Comedy Zone, and I was featuring for this lady that played guitar, and I did think she was funny. She was doing a great job, but as I watched her through the weekend, I go, "Yeah, I mean, she's fine, but I don't see why she's holding a place that I couldn't take." You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to sound any kind of way. I'm really just talking. It's like, that's what this is. That's what the podcast world is, right? It's like every week I'm tasked with, now I do the task to myself, but I am tasked with talking for an hour alone. And then I'll do another podcast and then another thing and another thing. And I'm just talking. And then someone will find a couple of sentences and go, "Who does this guy think he is? Oh, I should have been the headliner." And it's like, I'm really just talking. And it's more an inner monologue of, you know, how I was feeling at the time. Do I still kind of have those feelings? Sure. But I don't think I'm better than anybody. I don't think anything. But I am in this Comedy Zone that night, and I'm just thinking, you know, I could be doing this. I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't even know why I'm not even being considered. And the biggest complaint, because in a lot of ways, featuring, and that's the middle act. They call that the feature. They call it the host or the opener, and then the middle act or the feature, and then the headliner. And in a lot of ways, the feature act is the place to be. Your name's not on the marquee, so you're not in charge of selling any tickets. Nobody knows who you are. So even if you're not good, nobody cares. They don't care. They don't remember. It doesn't make any difference. But if you crush, you're like the surprise of the night. People go, oh, goodness, I can't believe you were that funny. You should have been the headliner. You know, things like that. Real ego strokes. But the money's terrible. Now, again, depending on what the middle act is, right? If you're doing theater gigs with someone, opening for someone in a theater gig, it's a different ball game. But if you're just working the club, especially some of these bad clubs, the money's really bad for the open. The money's not even that great for the headliner in some of these really bad clubs. And all of this stuff varies. There's such a variance with the pay scale in clubs. It's pretty wild how it varies. I thought I heard something. I think it was my stomach. Earlier in this room, I think I heard something in the ceiling or in the wall. I don't know. So I'm just trying to see if that's it. So I'm watching this lady, and I'm thinking this, and I go, yeah, I should be doing that. And so the next show, I go up, and I crush. I had a I don't know. Maybe I'm delusional. Maybe my delusion is remembering my shows better than they were. But I think I crushed. And then I get off, and as I'm walking to the back, this guy stops me, and he goes, dude, you really crushed it. You know, I mean, I don't remember his exact words, but he was pumped. I mean, he stopped me to tell me how good it was. So I was like, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And then after the show, me and the lady are selling merch, or we're at least meeting and greeting in people. I don't know what we're doing, but we're back there standing beside each other. And the guy comes back there. That guy comes back to the merch table, and he gives her basically the same spiel he gave me, almost word for word, said the same thing to her. I was like, oh, okay. And then he turns to me, and he goes, ah, you were a little dry. And I'm like, why? Wait, you're taking back your comments now? It was so funny before, but now, it's a little dry. You were a little dry for me. So maybe that guy was giving the reports. I don't know. But that's a lot. But Harrisburg was fun. I liked that club. I always did like that club. Hotel was terrible, but I did like the club. So, all right. Wow. I did a tangent inside of a tangent to get back to where I'm at. So I had to fly into Harrisburg, and then my friend Derek Humphrey, who was opening for me over the weekend, picked me up. That's pretty impressive, the tangent inside of a tangent. Back to the story. Gosh, I should write a class on tangents. And he drove me from Harrisburg to York, where we did the show, and we went to a place called the Manchester Diner there in town. Ran into a guy named Mike in the parking lot. I thought Mike looked like Kevin Nash pulling up in his truck. And when he got out of the truck, he didn't at all look like Kevin Nash. But in the truck, I thought he looked like Kevin Nash. And we went in there and ate, and we were eating. We got food. And the menu, they had this menu item called Hog Maw, which I can't stop talking about. I did a show last night at Zany's, and I could not stop talking about it. Hog Maw. And in the menu, it had Hog Maw on. They had daily specials. I think they had all 7 days daily special. Maybe it was five. I don't know. But and it had a list of foods you could get. And Hog Maw was on the special every day. That's something you could get every day at the Manchester Diner. And I asked the girl that was my waitress, I go, what's Hog Maw? She goes, oh, it's pig stomach stuffed with vegetables. I go, all right, that sounds disgusting, you know. She goes, is that what you want? And I go, absolutely not. You know, I didn't get too into it with her, but even if I was eating pork, I would not get Hog Maw. I wouldn't go for pig stomach. I wouldn't go for cow stomach or sheep stomach, maybe in a tight, in a pinch. But I know people are sick of me talking about pork, so I'm not going to get too into it. But hog maw sounded disgusting. And she goes, it's very popular. She goes, I don't eat it, but it is very popular. And I go, okay. And then there was an old lady sitting in a booth over there, and she goes, yeah, it's real popular around here. I don't eat it, but it's popular. And I go, well, that seems to be the thing. Everybody says it's popular, but nobody eats it. And that lady laughed pretty good. And I don't normally crush in a restaurant like that. And it was good. And but she goes, if my mom were here, she'd tell you all about it. And this lady was 80. I'm like, well, yeah, your mom was alive in 1823. So, of course, she would have ate it. That might have been the only options back then. But I really liked York, Pennsylvania. I think I really like Pennsylvania. I've been driving through there a lot. I went to a diner called like Leg, not a diner, a farmer's market called like Leg Up Farmer's Market. And they were selling raw milk in there. Apparently in Pennsylvania, raw milk is legal. And man, that puts me high on your list. If you're selling if your state sells legal raw milk, you're high on my list. All I know is Pennsylvania and South Carolina. There may be more. But man, and I got a half gallon of raw milk, and I was tearing it up. I didn't finish it, but I did drink a lot of it. I loved it. People get real sketched out by it. But that's, you know, that's more programming than anything. They go, you could get sick from that. And I go, yeah, you can get sick from anything. And I've been sick from a lot of things that people tell you is safe. And raw milk is delicious. It is unbelievable. But there's a lot of propaganda around raw milk. They might even censor this video. But it's delicious. And I was making my protein shakes out of it. I had some cereal. It's a good cereal I've been buying. I forgot what it's called, but it's like grain-free cereal, and it's actually pretty good. It looks like dog food, but it tastes good. So, and then the show in York, Pennsylvania was great. Love the town, love Pennsylvania. Then I went up to Tysons, Virginia. Tysons, Virginia, or McLean, as it showed on my weather app, is a weird town that seems to be owned by Capital One Bank. All the buildings around, it was way more city than I was expecting. I was thinking Virginia, Tysons like the chicken, and Virginia like some rural part of the country. But it was basically Washington, D.C., right around there. And I had fun, loved the show, ran into a lot of people at the hotel that I was staying at. All in all, great weekend, great experience. But I did not expect Tysons, Virginia to be that city. But I liked it. I'm back on cigars to a degree. I've been doing the small ones. And I've not been ramping it up too much, but I have been on them. I like them. Still off the weed, but I'm on the cigars. Heavily off weed. I don't even remember when the last time I've done that. But I've been doing push-ups. I said that I was trying to do 20 push-ups a day. I go, no matter what, I want to do the 20 push-ups a day. And this guy commented, I think in the We're Having a Good Time Facebook group, he said, oh, good for Dusty saying he's going to do 20 push-ups. But I've seen Dusty. I think he should be doing 200 push-ups. And I just want to stop you right there and say, I appreciate the compliment. I appreciate that you looked at me and said, I bet that guy could do 200 push-ups a day. And I could probably if I were just straight up trying to work it. But my point, and then he said, it's hard to get back in shape. Well, it's even harder when you've probably never truly been in shape. I think there's been periods of my life where I've worked out harder than others, but I've never been a push-up guy. I find push-ups to be one of the hardest things. When I was working out real heavy, bench pressing a lot, like trying to max out my weight, and was looking pretty jacked. I was never defined or cut, but I was looking pretty jacked. I couldn't do push-ups well. And then on the opposite side, when I quit drinking and I was riding a bike everywhere and was going to the gym and doing a lot of low weight, heavy rep, I still could not do a lot of push-ups. But I will tell you, that because of this guy's post, I got a little motivated and I thought, you know what? I can do more than 20. And yesterday I did 100 push-ups. That's the most I've done. I started doing 40. I do 40. And then I was like, you know what? I bet I could bop out another 20 later in the day and I'd do 60. And then I got up to 80. And then last night when I got home from Zany's, I thought, I did 80. Could I pop out another 20? And I did. So I appreciate that motivation. I had my sickness did slow down a little bit more of my working out. Various things have happened. I was working out during my son's nap and he stopped napping. But I have been sticking with the push-ups. And I did fast today. Today's Wednesday, the 19th. It was our fast day that we talked about. I stopped eating around 7:40 Tuesday night. And then I ate around 8 o'clock tonight. So I did a full 24 hours fast, and I felt pretty good. I didn't even really get that hungry to the end of the day. I wasn't as dedicated on Bible reading or, prayer, praying as I would have liked to have been. But I did do it, and I did get into it. And so I appreciate anybody who did that with me. I don't know what the overall goal was, but I just think that when we fast and pray in unison together, I think it's good. I think our voices are heard. You know, when the Israelites were in slavery in Egypt, God, they cried out to God and he heard their prayers and rescued them. All right. So I read Deuteronomy 9 today. I think Deuteronomy 9 is popping. I've been working through the New Testament, which I never talk about, but I've been working through that. I just finished 1 Corinthians. So I've been working my way through, but slowly because I've been back and forth, but, I find it good. I'm not going to dive into anything in because, somebody said in the comments, I'm pretty sick of the pork talk. And I get it, buddy. I get it. That's what I said to him. I get it. But don't eat it. But I do get it. You know what I mean? Speaking of that, though, I'd like to rant a little bit about this. I got a couple of rants, I think. I don't know. You know what? I think I called them rants, and then when other people describe the podcast now, they think I'm ranting. I have a hard time not reading YouTube comments for the Nateland podcast, even when I'm not on. I have to go read. And there was some comment in there for today's episode where, I don't know, somebody was referencing this podcast, and then another guy was like, I can't listen to solo podcasts where people are just ranting. And that's fine. I get it. And then another guy was like talking about how I'm mentioning that I don't like the trajectory of Nateland and that I complain about Nate's success or something like that. I don't recall ever doing those things. So I'd like to clear that up. I don't know if I've ever complained about Nateland on here. I know I complained about some sponsors one time. I know I've complained about an episode and I talked about the incident with the, where I won the award and then Aaron made fun of me. That's just general complaints. And I definitely don't complain about Nate's success. Nate has, made an incredible career for himself. My only complaint that I ever have is that people do that sort of thing about me being on the podcast. They act like I'm jealous of Nate's success. The only thing that bothers me is that Nate is so successful that in contrast, sitting next to him, a guy with two Netflix specials, me, seems like some sort of open mic showcase comic out here. And that and that is not even with, that complaint is not even with Nate or with the podcast. It's with a select few podcast listeners that like go, oh, he's so jealous of Nate. And it's like, I don't think I can reiterate more hard how happy I am with the type of career that I have. I've carved out a nice little niche for myself. I have a family that I get to stay home with almost all week. And then I go away for basically two nights, sometimes more. But for the most part, I leave on Friday. I come home on Sunday. I do two shows, and then I'm back home. It's like that's the kind of life I've always wanted. Now, money-wise, and I don't know what Nate makes, but I can only imagine it is so much more than me. Just sheer volume of his shows, how big they are, but he does have a lot of overhead, I'm sure, too. But it's just like sheer volume of people that come to his shows, I can't imagine what he must be raking in. But, and sure, who wouldn't want to have the money? But Nate is a hard worker. I mean, the guy works like I used to have to work on a 9-to-5. And I hate doing that. I love to do my shows. And then I got too many things I'm doing right now. I'm annoyed by it. I like to do my shows and then piddle around in the garden. You know, I'm not trying to be gone every night. I'm overwhelmed as it is. So I just want to reemphasize that for anybody who might be popping over from Nate Land to go, oh, what's he doing? Just complaining about, and I complain about a lot of things, but that is not one of them that I'm spending time on this podcast complaining about Nate being the biggest comic in the world, potentially. It's unbelievable. It would be so asinine to be like envious. Envy, by the way, not good. That's coveting. Also one of the Ten Commandments. Don't do it. Not that any of us are immune to it, but don't do it. That's a bad one. Coveting, I believe, coveting is one of the worst. And again, I'm not immune to it. I am not immune to it. But I think it's one of the worst ones. And I think it's often overlooked the details of what coveting can be. But coveting can bring you so much unhappiness. It's so dangerous. If you sit around and you go, oh, I just wish I had what that guy had. I wish I had this. I wish I had that. It's so dangerous because it will rob you of your own happiness. There's plenty of poems written about, oh, the guy who has this wishes he had that, and the guy that has that thing wishes he had this. Plenty of stuff like that. But that's what coveting is. It's like you see something that somebody else has, and you go, oh, I wish I had that. I don't think there's anything wrong with ambition. You go, oh, look what this guy's worked for and achieved. I'd like to work for and achieve those same things too. But coveting, very dangerous. It's so bad. It robs you of all your joy and happiness. And I think the internet has created coveting at an astounding level because, you know, you just see people on the internet and you know, they have filters. And even if they're not using filters, they're showing you the best angles and the best things of their life. And it's just, and I'm not saying everybody that posts is fake. Some people that post are beautiful. Some people that do post are having amazing lives. But most chances are you only see those parts. And even and when people post videos of themselves crying, I believe it less. I go, I don't believe you're really crying right now. I believe you're faking a cry for attention. I don't believe, I'm not saying somebody might not start a video and tear up a little bit, but if you start crying, cut it off. Especially if you're a man. I don't know if that's sexist, but don't. The amount of men that started crying on TV all of a sudden is unbelievable. The moment I see a man start tearing up on TV, I start to throw up in my mouth. I can't handle it. I go, what are you doing? Control yourself. That's why when if they ever make fun of someone about not having emotion, I go, that's the kind of person I want to see on TV. I want to see emotionless people. I like the people on the news. You know what I mean? They got no emotion. But sometimes the news people will fake a cry. And I go, get out of here, you soulless zombie. You're not crying. You're not crying. Do not wipe away fake tears. Ah, people crying. I can't handle it. Almost in real life, I'm like, get out of here. I can't handle it. I got two kids. They cry. And I go, all right, I get it. But even then, anyway, I don't know what I'm even talking about, but the fast was good. I enjoyed myself. That's the first fast I've done in a long time. That's not the Day of Atonement, and that's not because my body was feeling bad. Actually, my body feels very good. I saw a new doctor, and I like what she's got going on, and I've been feeling very good, even with a lot of trouble. I flew home from Tysons, Virginia, jumped in the car, drove to Alabama to hang out with my dad for a couple of days. Well, hung out with my dad for one day. I drove down on Sunday. We spent Monday with him. Came back on Tuesday. So, very quick trip. We did our own little Thanksgiving. My sister and her husband, that's the only time they had off together. So, they made the trip. So, I was like, well, I'll make the trip too. My stepmom whipped up a Thanksgiving dinner for us. My cousin Kathy and her husband Van came over. We had a good time. We ate some food. The kids got to play around. My son loves tractors. My dad has, you know, about 20. He has so many tractors. It's unbelievable. Meaning he has several actual tractors, but then he has like lawnmowers and then broken down lawnmowers and then a four-wheeler and a broken down motorcycle and just so many things that my son can sit on and go, take a picture. And then they also had a lot of toys for Daisy and pretty amazing. A lot of fun. A lot of fun. We took a ride. My dad has a Polaris, which that's what we always call by the name, but it's a side-by-side. And my dad's lost vision in one eye. He tore his retina in his eye and had several surgeries, and it's messed up. He can't even really see out of it. But he drives, and then he takes us down these trails. And every time he drives me, like, it's my dad on one side, me on the other side, and then my wife and kids in the middle. And my dad always drives way too close to the bushes for me. So I'm having to protect the kids and my wife and my face with my bare arms and hand. And I got cut up. And it's not the end of the world. This is not the worst I've been cut up. But I got a few cuts on my hands and arm from briars just ripping me apart as we're driving through. Oh, but I did also dig up oak trees. I've been getting into that now. I got a whole new thing. I got a whole new thing I'm into now. I'm about to grow some acorn. I'm about to try to grow some oak trees from acorns. I'll give you a little quick rundown on that. They say collect the acorns, throw it in a bowl of water. If they float, then they're no good for growing. Separate them. If they sink, they're good and they have a good chance of sprouting. And then they say take them, put them in a bag with a little bit of peat moss mix. And I don't remember if they said put them in the freezer or put them in the fertilizer or in the refrigerator, but I had four bags. I did two in the freezer, two in the refrigerator. They say leave it in there for about 45 days and then plant it, and you should be able to grow some oak trees. So that's what I'm into. I'm about to grow some oak trees, and then I dug up about seven little oak trees. I dug up eight. I lost one somehow. I dug up about seven little oak trees. I planted three on my property near my house, and then I'm going to go out to the cabin soon, and I'm going to plant the other four. And that's what I'm into. And I know oak trees take a long time to grow, but I'm about to embark on a lifelong journey to plant oak trees because they say it's the best tree in North America for wildlife. And I don't think we have enough of them. And I think if you have one of those, what Bradford pears, you should cut it down and burn it. If you have a tree of heaven, chop, hack and squirt it. Chop it with a little hatchet, spray some pesticides in there. If you got a, a mimosa tree, cut it down. I know they're beautiful. They're beautiful, but they're invasive. They're probably shading out an oak tree that the animals would like more. The native birds and native insects would like the native trees, the oak, the great American oak. So that's what I'm about to embark on. Although, few videos I've seen over the years, Bill Gates says climate change is out of control. We're never going to be able to stop it. We're all going to die. And then he says we're not going to be able to plant enough trees to combat climate change. And then the latest one I heard is that climate change no longer a big deal. So that's what I heard. I also heard that they're people are becoming allergic to meat because they don't want us to eat meat. Meat's good. Eat it. The Bible tells you to eat meat. If you want to be a vegetarian, be a vegetarian. But the Bible tells us that eating meat is good. It's good. Beef, lamb, goats, deer, that's good for us. Eat it. Don't let them lie to you. It's good for you. Unless you just want to eat vegetables, and then do that. I think veganism is extreme. I understand it from a animal rights standpoint. I do get that. Because, you know, people are mean to animals. I find that people, the further out in the country you get, the meaner people are to animals. You would think they would be the closer and more in touch with them. But I also think that people in the city are mean to their dogs by locking them in a cage all day while they go to work. But that's neither here nor there. I got some good dog jokes now. God, they are hot. I got a good one off my Making the Fudge album that I put out in 2014 called 'Cause He's a Dog. It's a great joke. I think I may have somebody animate that if they're into it. Okay. All right. Oh, I'm running out of time here and I've not even done my tangent. I got two little tangents. I went to a barbecue place in Birmingham. I debated whether I was going to say the name or not. And I don't think I am. There's no need to shame them. But I just want to talk. It is a further talk about the state of restaurants out here. Now, this is a bit of a chain, but it's a, and I probably will give it away if I get too detailed. But if I give it away by the details, so be it. I've been to one of these before. And it was good, but this is an Alabama-based barbecue restaurant, I believe. But it is a bit of a chain. And I stopped in one in Birmingham, and I ran into a guy there who said he was a fan of mine, but he seemed very important, and I worried that he owned the restaurant. And I was like, now I'm about to talk about this guy's restaurant. But he messaged me on Instagram, and I saw the message, and I go, oh, great. I go, do you own it? And he goes, oh, no. And I go, okay, perfect. So now, again, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt here. I don't eat pork, so they may be crushing it on the ribs and the pulled pork. But they had pork and chicken. That was the two options. No brisket. So I ordered. It was four of us. Now Hannah went in first and went right to the bathroom. She said there was no toilet paper, no paper towels. Bad sign. She said the bathroom was a mess and they had a checklist in there that no one had been filling out. I didn't go to the bathroom until after, and then there were no paper towels. It didn't seem clean. The restaurant did not seem clean. And then it took forever. We got there right as it opened, basically, a little after. And we got there for lunch. But it was a Tuesday, so I'm giving a lot of benefit of the doubts here, but I'll give them that it's Tuesday, you know. But it wasn't very busy. It was getting busier as we were there. So we sat down, the four of us, and it takes a little while even for them to get to us, even though at the time we were about the only table in there. It takes them a little while to get to us, but we order. I make a little order, a little mix of things. I order a half chicken, barbecue chicken. I order some pulled chicken. I order some chicken fingers. Each of those items come with two sides. and it was $17 for one, $17 for another, and $20 for another. Very expensive right off the bat. I was like, geez. But I think, all right, well, this is good. It's a local, kind of a local establishment. It's going to be really good. Took forever to come out. The restaurant started to fill up. Took forever to come out. I had to walk the kids. I walked the kids around the whole building two times. I let them run around the restaurant and then took them outside because I was trying to get them to burn off some energy because they were getting pretty wild in there waiting on the food because they had been pent up in the car all day. And then the food comes. It's smothered in barbecue sauce. It's not warm. It's warm at best. None of the food is hot. Macaroni and cheese was cold. And the chicken strips were basically, you know, a fried, frozen, refried chicken strip. I would think with a kind of a local barbecue place that it would be like, you know, battered and fried and then deep, you know, whatever. But it wasn't. And then the chicken was so dry and just smothered in barbecue sauce. And I say all this, it was just like Hannah started to seem mad midway through the meal. And I go, what's wrong? She goes, I'll talk to you about it later. And that sort of thing means like, oh crap, what have I done, you know? But she was just grossed out by the restaurant and didn't want to say it inside the restaurant. So we pay. The service is mediocre. They don't come. She don't come around till way later while we're eating. I'd say the service was bad, honestly. And then the bill comes and it's roughly $60. That's $60 for three meals, no drinks. We all got waters, no desserts, no appetizers, and none of the meals were good. And you know, and then I still tip well. I'm not going to tip bad. I just don't have it in me to tip bad. But I'm like, and then this restaurant will close and everybody will go, oh, sign of the times, man. The economy's so bad. The chicken was so dry. It seemed like they cooked the chicken last night and then the first people into the restaurant today got the old chicken from last night. I felt a little nauseous when I left. Fortunately, I didn't get sick. But it's like, that's where we're at with restaurants now. That's where we're at, is that the majority of them are just total garbage. The chain restaurants are all food off the Sysco truck, and then local establishments have just lost their ability to care. Now, sure, there are some out there that still care. But the majority of them, it's just garbage, slop, and they don't care. And then when they go out of business, they blame the economy. I'm not saying the economy's good, but I'm just saying it's garbage out here. And I just left there feeling, I apologized to my family a couple of times for taking them there, for spending $60 on lunch. I apologized to them. We almost went to the Whole Foods and just got food there. I've been eating, like, you could have got three hot meals off the buffet at Whole Foods for less than $20 a piece and no tip. I could get sushi in Whole Foods for $18. I'm not saying it's the world's best sushi, but I've been eating it lately. I've been eating sushi from the grocery store all over the place, and it's good. I like it. Now, if you're listening from Japan or Korea, you're probably offended by that. But I'm just saying, for where I'm at, it's pretty good. And we were so close to there. And then I saw this barbecue place and I go, oh, this is a pretty famous Alabama barbecue place. Let's stop there. And it was like such a letdown. I watch a lot of Restaurant Impossible, the TV show hosted by Robert Irvine. And all I ever think when I go into these restaurants is, what would Robert Irvine's reaction be? And I would think it would be total disgust. Now, the last benefit of the doubt that I'll give them is I didn't get pork, and it is a barbecue restaurant. Maybe it's phenomenal. But I would think your other secondary item should at least be above total garbage. For that price, I mean, legit, we could go into Whole Foods and got Got two hot bars and sushi for less than I spent there, and I think we would have felt more satisfied. Whole Foods gets a bad rap of being so expensive, and it is more expensive than, say, a Kroger, but it gets a bad rap. But the food quality is good. I mean, you know, you can't just guarantee because you walked into Whole Foods that everything's good and healthy and great, but they do have that stuff in there. Sprouts is a good one. Trader Joe's is good. I like those places. Publix is good. I like Publix. I'm a big fan. I'm not a fan of Aldi, by the way. People love Aldi, and it's okay if you love it, but I'm not a fan. I don't like what they got going on in there. Okay, here's my other rant. That was it. That was it for my restaurant thing. But I, you know, I don't know if it's so much of a rant. It's just like, it's just sheer disappointment. You just leave a place, and, you know, after tip, let's say, I think the total came to $58, and then let's say you leave a $12 tip. That's $70 that I spent for lunch. We didn't finish a single thing. And she did ask, did we want any boxes? And we go, nah, that's okay. And nobody thought, oh, they didn't finish any of their meal. Like if I was working, and I feel like I've done this before, when I was waiting tables, if I was working and I noticed that my table seemed totally unsatisfied, I might ask them about it. I might try to drag it out of them. I might even send a manager by just to say, hey, why don't you go check on them? They seem pretty unhappy with their meals. Why don't you check on them? But they didn't do that. Nobody checked. And it's just like, it's just mind-blowing how bad it is. And it'll close, and people will blame the economy, or they'll go, oh, this place was an institution. It's such a shame. And they'll blame some chain restaurant for running them out of business. But they did it to themselves. They did it to themselves. Here's my other one. I hope I didn't talk about this somewhere. I know I've told this story to people. I hope I didn't talk about it. I didn't do a podcast this. I didn't do Nateland this week. So, all right, I was boarding a plane, an American Airlines plane. And I've got a new bag. I've got myself a rolling bag, but it's a small rolling bag. I got tired of the backpack. I don't like the look of the backpack anymore, and I feel like it's hurting my shoulders. I don't know if I'm getting weak out here, but I just got a lot of crap in there, and it's too heavy, and I don't want to carry it on my shoulders anymore. I want to roll a little bag. I still check a bag because I carry a big bag. I carry a lot of stuff. One day I may go and do a video about all the stuff that I carry with me. It's not even a lot of clothes. I got a big bag, but I'm carrying a lot of things because I travel too much for, I don't know, I just can't handle my hotel not feeling a bit like home. And I don't mean I'm hanging up pictures on the wall, but I got some things I need. So I still check a bag, and then I have this as my carry-on. And I was boarding a plane. It was a pretty small plane, so the lady running the desk was like giving everybody a checked bag ticket. You know, like, because you can check your bag as you arrive at the airport. And then if you want a carry-on, you take it on through security, and then you go to the booth there right before you board the plane. And if they say, well, this plane is a really small aircraft, and we're going to need to check some bags, they'll put it just under the plane, and then when you get off, they'll hand it to you there instead of sending it to the carousel. So she's handing out tickets, and I go, you don't think this will fit on the plane? She goes, it might, but I'm going to go ahead and give you a ticket anyway, just in case. And she was very polite. I accepted it. I go, thank you. I appreciate you. But the lady behind me in line, also boarding the plane, worked for American Airlines, and she was in uniform. But she was just boarding, I guess, to go home. And she goes, nah, that's not going to, she said in a real rude tone. She goes, nah, that's not going to fit. That's too long and fat is what she said, which there was room for a nice joke there, but I didn't do it, nor am I going to do it here. She said, that's not going to fit, you know. And I go, oh, okay. And then I had this long walk down the jet bridge to get on the plane. And the whole time I'm walking out, I'm just thinking about what this lady has just said to me. And I'm so annoyed by it because I'm like, she's now put me in a position to where if I decide that I'm going to go ahead and check and see if it will fit, then I'm just like some stubborn guy out here. Oh, he won't listen to a woman. And maybe that wouldn't be her attitude, but it feels like it would be her attitude because she stuck her nose in my business. And it just felt like she was going to be like, ah, oh, you don't want to listen to nobody. You think you know everything. And I just was like, I purposely have this bag as a carry-on because I have stuff in here. I may want to dig through on the plane. I got a laptop in here. I got my headphones in here. I got water in here. I got a tea bottle in here. I got things I want out of this bag. I want this bag with me. So I got down to the bottom and I made the decision. I said, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and check. So I boarded the plane. There was another lady there, flight attendant waiting. I go, hey, I'm just going to check to see if this bag will fit. She goes, yeah, it will. And she goes, just put it in like this. She told me how to do it. I went down, tried it like that, fit perfect, like a glove. The lady, other lady boarded after me, and I didn't directly call her out, but I did loudly say, oh, it fits. I said it loud enough to where she could hear. Oh, it fits. I was so annoyed. And then when I got off the plane, for whatever reason, she stayed in her seat while the rest of us got off. So I had to walk by her. And I made eye contact with her the whole way. She was kind of looking at me. I made eye contact with her the whole way. And then as I get off, everybody's lining up to wait on their bags. And I think, you know, if I'd listened to this lady, I'd be waiting for my bag. I wouldn't have had my headphones. And I'd be waiting for this lady. And it just was so annoying. It's like, lady, just mind your business. Let me talk about it with the people that are working. You're off. Just be off. But she was like, came in like a real know-it-all. Nah, that's not going to fit. But it did. You ever have people, there was a commercial like that. I forget what the commercial was, but it was like, people driving by, people trying to load things in their car going, ah, it's not going to fit. It's like, don't tell me it's not going to fit. Never tell me it's not going to fit because I'm going to try anyway. And now you've just made it weird between us. I do this, you know, I've had this sort of incident a couple of times. I showed up to a public restroom one time and there was a line. People were waiting in line. And like a long time we were waiting in line. And then eventually I'm like, what are we doing here? You guys want to check that, knock on that door or whatever? And the guy checks the handle and the door's unlocked and there's no one in there. But I showed up and there was three people in line and I just trusted that someone in that line had checked the door. But oh, heaven forbid you go up and push an elevator button that's already been pushed. I go, I don't trust the way you push the button. I don't trust it. I don't think you can do it right. You know what I mean? And I don't. I don't think people can do it right. What else do I got? Oh, here's a good one. This is a good end of one. I don't know if I could find this video, but I had floated this conspiracy theory once before. I heard it briefly on something, and then I went and looked up a bunch of pictures, and I saw another video the other day. I don't know if I saved it. I hope I can find it, but that Morgan Freeman is Jimi Hendrix. And it sounds crazy. I know it does. But I believe it. They look similar. And when you see young pictures of Morgan Freeman, he looks like Jimi Hendrix. You could pull him up and go, oh, no, they're not. Oh, this and that. Even their teeth look similar. They have a very almost exact smile. It's very weird. I don't know why they did it. I don't know why they swapped him out. But it's like Jimi Hendrix, as we've talked about on this podcast, is like, you know, number one guitar player of all time, all the time. And then Morgan Freeman is was, at least, I don't know if he's doing anything now, but an incredible actor that everyone loved. Jimi Hendrix had a pretty deep voice. Morgan Freeman has one of the most iconic voices of all time next to mine. And I don't know why that happened. I don't know why Bill Hicks is Alex Jones, but he is. And I don't know why Jim Morrison became Rush Limbaugh. And what was some others? That's all I can come up with now. I don't know why they did those things, but I believe they did. Jimi Hendrix is Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman is Jimi Hendrix. Mark it down. And sports are rigged. They're more rigged than ever. And it's rigged through the referees. I just saw a video. I've been saying this. I wish anybody could go back and find the things I've said on Nate Lynn and the things I've said on this podcast and document them, because they're all going to be right, guys. They're all going to be right. Can I be wrong? Of course I can. Of course I can. I don't know where, but nobody's right 100% of the time. But I've been saying for a long time, sports are rigged, and it's rigged through the referees. That doesn't mean it's scripted, but I also saw a video, and this is something I had not thought about before, but based on the latest NBA scandal, it makes me think it's true. That players, either they get them addicted to it or they get addicted to gambling. They have all this money and they get addicted to gambling. And then they go in debt. So then they've made millions, but they're in debt. And they go, listen, we'll wipe your debt clean if you throw this game, if you throw a couple of interceptions. And then they do. And it's like, who can blame them? They've been manipulated by a system too. Because I always thought, well, they're throwing the games, but they're already so rich. Why would they want to throw the game? That's why I felt like it was rigged through the referee. But now, and I still think it's rigged through the referee, but I can see why they would throw a game, because, you know, their lives are on the line, or they're just trying to make some money back. They've been manipulated by a system. It's all a scam. But life is good, and that's why we got to fast. We got to fast. We got to pray to the Lord that he protects us, that he takes care of us, that he feeds us, and that in times of trouble, he's there for us. Deuteronomy 9, all of Deuteronomy, is just a power-filled book where Moses is telling the people, he's telling God's people. Jesus says that the people that follow him are God's people. And you know, I believe that, you know, that, and that's the thing. Anybody can follow Jesus. And that's what's beautiful about it. Anybody can do it. Right where you stand right now, you can start following Jesus. It's beautiful and it's amazing. And Moses is telling God's people, you follow these commandments that he's given you today. He said, I've given you a blessing and a curse today. It's a blessing if you follow them. It's a curse if you don't. And I think it's amazing. I think it's beautiful. And it's not works. People said, oh, you're trying to work to get into heaven. It's like, no, it's not works. Most of the laws are abstaining from things. It's not things that you're doing. It's things that you're now not doing. It's amazing. It's beautiful. The Bible's poetry. Read Psalms. What I like to do is read Psalms, King James Version, out loud. It's fun to read it out loud. They say the Bible was meant to be read out loud, that the Word of God was meant to be spoken and not just read. I went out into the garden today. I sat in a chair. I read a couple of verses of Deuteronomy. I read a couple of chapters of Deuteronomy out loud to myself in the garden. And then I prayed for the people that listen to this podcast. I appreciate you guys. None of this is about, I mean, like, listen, I want enough people to come to my shows so I can continue to make a living. I want people to watch and listen to the podcast. But there is deeper meaning to life. there is more to it than consumerism. Not the podcast, the consumers. Listen to that podcast. Those are great guys. But it's more than consumerism. It's more than just entertaining ourselves. It's feeding our souls. Getting to heaven. Living a heavenly life on earth. Planting oak trees. Growing acorns. Do grow some oak trees from an acorn. I think we should all do that. I think that's a fun project. Plant it somewhere where it gets a lot of sunlight and then watch it grow and watch the birds come. They say it takes forever for an oak to grow. But I like to think I plant the oak tree now and my kids will live to see a giant oak tree that their dad planted, that potentially they planted with their dad. Imagine if you plant, my kids are 4 and 2. Imagine if I planted a tree with my daughter, my 4-year-old daughter today, and when she's 54, how big will that tree be? Be unbelievable. And the Deuteronomy also says, if you follow the commandments, you're lengthening your life. So I'll be 94, so maybe I'll be there, but I don't follow them all. I break them a lot. Praise the Lord for the grace of God. You know what I mean? Comment or email me at dustyslaycomedy@gmail.com if you had any interesting experiences while fasting. I'd love to read them. I'd love to share your story of fasting and what it was like to fast on the day we put aside. Did you like it? Would you be into doing it again? I think it's a great exercise coming together. Thank you, guys. We're having a good time.